This will be the first of three short lectures that will complement the reading material, and it covers material not in the readings. It concerns measurement both for patient care as well as for research. So first we'll start with just some basic concepts of measurement, and we'll look at numbers and how numbers can be used in research and patient care. So numbers describe objects when we use them in research and patient care. And there is a special case. We won't go into this a lot, but just you should know about it. There are some coding schemes used in dentistry, and these are numbers, special sets of numbers that are used to describe procedures or diagnosis. And the CDT, the current dental terminology, is a set of codes used to describe dental procedures, and this is what insurance companies use for billing. There's another code called SNOMED. It's not used that much in dentistry right now, and it's used to describe a diagnosis, both dental as well as medical diagnosis. There's also another condition of numbers or measurements, and that's the operational definition. And the operational definition is the sort of the background of how you're taking this measurement. And it's also used important for patient record as well as research. And you need to define how you took that measurement so it's repeatable by another person. And also, you want to state all the conditions and the procedures. And this is really important when you're doing research for taking the measurement. So a good operational definition defines the procedures precisely so that someone else can replicate the data. An example of this is even blood pressure. Blood pressure can mean different things, whether the patient is sitting, standing, laying down, whether it's the right arm, the left arm. Same thing with the temperature. Is it an oral or a rectal temperature? So they're different. You have to say the criteria of how the measurement was taken. Okay, we're going to talk just briefly about variables and constants. And properties of objects that can take on different values are referred to variables. And, of course, a constant is a number that does not change or is constant. Okay, so that's very obvious. But we'll talk more about variables and their special relationship in research. Now, another way to group variables is by discrete or continuous. Discrete variables have a relatively small set of possible values. So you want to think of them like whole numbers. And in research, sometimes we assign numbers to categories. So gender could be male and female, so it would be one or two would be the variable assigned to that. Marital status, religious affiliation, things like that. So they're whole numbers. Continuous variables can theoretically assume any value between the lowest and highest point in the scale. So you can keep taking time or weight down to smaller fractions depending on how accurate your measurements are. Another type of variable is independent and dependent variable, and this applies to research when you're reading research papers. And you want to be able to recognize independent and dependent variables. So independent variables, they're the ones that are manipulated by the experimenter. They're under the control of the experimenter. And dependent variables, obviously, are not under the control of the experimenter, but they're the outcome that you want to be measured. So typically, we were interested in measuring the effects of independent variables on dependent variables. So what are independent and dependent variables? An experimenter measures blood pressure response in a male and a female hypertensive subjects and randomly assigns two drug treatment conditions, the standard medication A and approved medication B. Now let's look at the resolution of a measurement. How fine a detail can be measured, or the other possibility is interpolation, which is sort of reading between the lines. And we'll look at example, digital image of a pantograph and a periodontal probe. So here's a periodontal probe, and you'll see these little markings here. So this is 5 millimeters, and each one of these is a millimeter. And you'll notice that there isn't a number four. So this could be an example of an interpolation here, okay, where you're looking at in between. But you can see even here, you can find like 1.5 millimeters. You'd be able to read that. In a digital image, like a radiograph, this might be, say, 800 pixels wide and 200 pixels high. And each in a radiograph, there are little pixels, and you can't go finer than a pixel in an image. So that's the resolution. Now we have another four classes of variables, and these are nominal, ordinal, interval, and ratio. And you can see how they break down these different areas. You can use them to classify objects, but here's a criteria. The true zero point is only in the ratio, equal intervals or in interval and ratio, and we'll talk a little more about how to classify this, but this is a good chart to remember how these variables and how you use them. So let's first look at nominal data. Nominal data are classified as categorical data, and it's data that can order categories as arbitrary. Okay? An example of that is sex and race. So it's nominal also means name, so you're just naming categories. And again, if you assign numbers to these groups, they're arbitrary. Okay, so you could assign sex or gender. You could assign numbers like 1 and 2. 1 is male and 2 is female. And you use that just to keep track of this in research. You want to have enough categories, so it's unlikely that an object could be put into an appropriate category. But if you have too many, sometimes it becomes hard for people to find the right category. Second type is ordinal data. Again, ordinal data is a categorical data. Here there is some logic ordering to the categories. It both sorts and orders, so you can think of it as being hierarchical, but the intervals between the ranks are arbitrary. They're sort of meaningless. And an ordinal scale should not be averaged, okay? So you can't use parametric statistics like means and things like that because it's an arbitrary ranking. And an example of this is the Likert scale, where you go one is strongly agree, you know, and all the way going to strongly disagree. Okay. So that would be an example of a ordinal scale. And five would be over here in the strongly disagree. Next type is interval data. And again, now we're in special kinds, sort of like real numbers. Okay. This sorts and orders. It's a fixed unit of measurement. Example would be centigrade or Fahrenheit scale. But it may not be linear because, as you realize, between centigrade and Fahrenheit, the scales don't match up. So in this case, ratios are meaningless for interval data. You cannot say, for example, when one day is twice as hot as another because the scale is not exactly meaningful because it may not be linear. But there is a special case. What about a Kelvin temperature scale? A Kelvin temperature scale, in theory, has an absolute zero. And that would be called a ratio scale. So this is a special kind of interval scale that has a true zero point. Good example is birth weight. So weight can have zero. Time can have zero. Length can have zero. So the distinction between an interval and ratial data are very subtle, but it's important that it's zero. An example would be periodontal probing. You can have zero pocket depth. Let's talk a little bit about measurement error, and we'll go into some more about error later on. So a participant's score on a particular measure consists of two components. So whenever you make a measurement, your observed score is equal to the true score plus error. So every measurement has some type of error. So the true score, that's a score that the participant would have obtained if the measurement was perfect, but of course we don't have perfection. And a measurement error is a component of the observed score that is a result of factors that distort the score, and we'll talk a little more about types of special types of error. So characteristics of measures and manipulations, precision and clarity of the operational definition. Remember, that's defining all the conditions of how you took the measurement. You need to train the observers so they all know how to take measurements correctly. The number of independent observations, which a score is based on. So usually, you know, if there is a little error, if you take it two times, three times, it's like measure twice, cut once. Make sure you've minimized the error. And also measurements that induce fear or fatigue can produce a lot of error. An example here is periodontal probing, where you go around the patient's mouth and you're probing. If the patient is very apprehensive, then you may become sort of a little more timid when you take your measurements, or you're using less pressure, and you're not going to get the same as when you started. Now, there can be actual mistakes. Those could come from equipment malfunctions, electronic equipment, or maybe your periodontal probe had the end cut off and then it's shorter than what it should be, or the markings are wrong, and this does happen. There could be errors in the recording behaviors by the observers, so the observers could actually cause the error. And confusing response formats and self-reports, so in questionnaires and things like that, the respondents may not actually know what you're talking about and then come back with errors. And again, you can have data entry errors. Somebody just writes down the wrong thing in either the patient chart or your data log for your research. So measurement error undermines the reliability, the repeatability of measures that we use. So again, let's quickly go over the independent and dependent variables. Remember, independent variables are manipulated by an experimenter. They're under control of the experimenter. Dependent variables are not under the experimenter's control, and it's the outcome that we measure. And an independent variable is a variable that you believe might influence your outcome measure. And this might be a measure or a variable that you control, like a treatment, or it might be a variable that's not under your control, like exposure. Okay? So it's either treatment or exposure, usually. So someone who's exposed to radiation would be an example of an independent variable. It also might represent a demographic factor, such as age or gender. Okay? And contrast this with the definition of a dependent variable. Okay, and we'll look at some dependent variables next. An independent variable is the hypothesized cause or influence on a dependent variable. So one way to distinguish these variables is to ask yourself what you want to learn from this research. The dependent variable is a variable you are trying to predict. Any variable that you are using to try to make those predictions is an independent variable. So let's look at an example. A recently published research study examined the relationship of dietary fat consumption and the development of ischemic stroke in a cohort of 832 men who were free of cardiovascular disease at the baseline. This is 1966 to 1969, and who were followed for a 20-year period. Okay. In this study, what are the independent variables? Okay, so think about that. If you're unsure, ask your colleagues and then your team. In this study, the independent variables were the percentage of total fat in the diet, the percentage of saturated fat, and the percentage of monosaturated fat. Let's go back to that. So we're looking at the relationship of dietary fat consumption, right, and the development of ischemic stroke. Okay, so the independent variables is the dietary fat, and there are three types of fat. Dependent variable, in a research study, the variable that you believe might be influenced or modified by some treatment or exposure. Okay. It may also represent the variable you were trying to predict. Sometimes the dependent variable is called the outcome variable. And again, back to our example, in a recently published research study, we have a relationship of dietary fat consumption and the development of ischemic stroke. So what's the dependent variable? And of course, it's ischemic stroke. Okay, that's the end of this section, and there'll be two more sections following this. Thank you.